everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace. This is your New Comics Wednesday episode for February 21st, 2018. And Manny and I are going to be talking about a few of the books that we've read that you need to be on the lookout for tomorrow. But before we get into that, today was actually a big news day in the world of comics, so we want to just touch on a couple of the things that got announced today. And I guess we'll start with Marvel's rebooting again. So my reaction to this when I saw it was, like, at first I almost didn't even believe it. I almost thought somebody's just like messing around, right? Because I mean, it's been like every year for like the past 5-6 years, and now we're like 6 months and they're doing a reboot already. I don't even have words. But if I could play devil's advocate just for a second, I will say this. So we know that C.B. Sobolski got installed as the editor-in-chief like right around November or so, after Legacy and all that stuff was already planned and underway and everything. So I kind of understand this reboot just from the perspective of, so it's C.B. Sobolski and he wants to kind of put his own like stamp on it. And so I'm hoping, I'm cautiously optimistic that this is him like doing an actual reset and, you know, setting the books out as he wants them to be. And then there will be no more reboots going forward, you know, until they get another editor in chief. So I'm hopeful for that. Could they have done that without a reboot? Yes, they could have. I mean, honestly, at this point, Marvel's burned so many bridges and, you know, they've gone to that well of number one issues so many times. It just, you know, doesn't work anymore. The fans have fatigue. What Marvel hasn't done and what Sobolski should think about doing, rather than worry about reboot or rebrand or relaunch or this initiative or that marketing tool, whatever you want to call them, just get really good creators and get them to tell really good stories. And the word of mouth will build and everyone will be happy and Marvel, you know, everyone will be talking about Marvel's back. They did it. You know, C.B. Sobolski saved the day. He'll be a hero and people will start buying the books. That's what needs to happen. Does it need this fresh start, as they're calling it, to do that? In my opinion, no. But maybe they feel that it does, so whatever. I know they're going to have combo numbering. Manny mentioned that to me. So they'll continue with the legacy numbering, the high numbers, but they'll also have, you know, another smaller number on the cover, I guess, as a way to track it for new readers. I don't know. I did notice that the solicits were delayed. However, they normally would come out today for May, but they didn't. We've had a few creative teams announced. I think Jason Aaron is on Avengers. So, you know, probably off Thor, that critically acclaimed run. He's been on that title for quite a few years. Also, Donnie Cates is now doing Venom in addition to Thanos. And I think he's writing a couple other titles over there too. So I imagine that we'll see more announcements probably tomorrow when the solicits are rumored to be coming out. So yeah, I mean, every time in the past when they've talked about doing a relaunch or reboot or Marvel Now 7.0 or whatever, it's always, you know, they talk about a relaunch and a new direction, and oftentimes it's the same creative teams on the same books and nothing really changes other than the number on the cover. So I don't know. I'm trying to play devil's advocate and I'm trying to like be optimistic about it and just say, okay, maybe just one more time, Marvel, for Sobolski, and get back to the roots and telling good stories. But at the end of the day, when the movies are making so much money, and we'll talk about that next, it's kind of, in my mind, going to be hard for Disney and the powers that be over there at Marvel to divorce the books from the movie universe, which is what needs to be done, in my opinion, right? I mean, they talked about it when it first happened, when all the characters started looking like their counterparts in the movies, how, oh, no, it's the comics and the movies are totally different. We're not trying to make them look like they are in the movies and this and that. And we've seen that the movies don't move the needle as far as comic sales, so they don't need to look like what they look like in the movies. But yet that always seems to be the case. So yeah, forget. I mean, it's completely separate. So stop making them look like the movies. Stop putting out Inhuman books, if there's going to be an Inhumans TV show, just tell good stories. That's all you need to concentrate on, and the rest will come, as it eventually did for Marvel. That's why they are where they are right now. And luckily, they have years of back catalog that's quality that they can mine from, because if they were trying to write movies based on the comics that have come out in the last 3 or 4 years, garbage. I don't think those movies would do very well at all. Just my two cents. What do you have to say about this Marvel reboot one more time, Manny?
Not really. I wouldn't necessarily call it playing devil's advocate, because I'm excited to see the fact that they're going to be bringing back Scott Lang, Ant-Man comic book with the Wasp, it looks like, which will be a little confusing given that they had already a Wasp book, and I don't think that those two are going to necessarily intertwine. And then also Tony Stark will be back as Iron Man. We're going to get OG Thor back. And then in the image, that looks a little bit more like Bruce Banner, wouldn't you say? Did you see Jim Chung's image, the promo art?
Yeah, I saw it. I mean, just based on what's been going on with the Incredible Hulk title anyway, I had a feeling they were already heading back that direction, and that may have been, you know, already planned out in Legacy. Like, you know, Legacy is supposed to be getting back to the roots of the characters, but maybe I think a lot of people thought, okay, right at the beginning when Legacy starts, Tony Stark's going to be back, Bruce Banner's going to be back, Thor Odinson's going to be back.
And maybe, well, that's kind of like you were saying. They really didn't necessarily need to do this. I mean, Marvel Legacy, when it came out, they had announced that in the next few months, it will usher in the dramatic return of dozens of its most beloved heroes, villains, teams, artifacts that will begin the next chapter of the Marvel Universe. I mean, so like you said, it didn't necessarily need a reboot or a relaunch because of the fact that they're supposed to already be headed in that direction. Because let's be honest, when Marvel Legacy dropped in September, nothing changed besides the numbering. All the books still stayed the same. Matter of fact, then you lost a couple of books, and then you lost a couple more creators, and there weren't necessarily new jumping on points for readers. So with that said, it's just, for me, my reaction is I'm going to roll my eyes, because here comes another set of number ones, but these are going to be even more confusing because they're going to have the legacy number and the number one, and they're going to have a ton of variant covers like they so love to do, and the price is probably going to be $4.99, $5.99 for some of these. For people trying to catch up, people trying to read, a series of books, it'll be nice and confusing, just like it's been. I mean, we've had all new, all different Marvel, Marvel Now, Marvel Legacy, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know. We'll see. It's like you said, with the new editor in chief, maybe this will be, you know, this sticks. But it's also, like you said, going to really depend on what are these creative teams that they're bringing in. Because as far as I know, a lot of that talent is over at DC. even Brian Michael Bendis is at DC. So I don't know. They have to, for me personally, they have to prove it first, and then I can jump on board. But then again, I mean, for us, we've been trying to promote Marvel books and to read Marvel books, but Marvel has not, you know, extended an olive branch to us at all. I mean, we've gotten friendly responses from everybody else, including DC, but not Marvel. So, yeah.
Yeah, if we go back to 2012, Marvel Now, 2013, all new Marvel Now, 2014, Avengers Now, 2015, all new, all different Marvel, 2016, Marvel Now 2.0, 2017, Marvel Legacy, and now, less than a year later, 2018, Marvel A Fresh Start. So
I mean, do they reboot in September again?
Yeah, maybe. Well, this is supposed to start in May. Maybe they'll announce something at San Diego Comic-Con in July. Hey, we're going to do another reboot 3 months after May, you know, August. Here comes all new, all fresh start Marvel 2.0 that's completely different. I mean, at this point, who knows? I will say you kind of wonder about some of their titles that are actually doing okay or seem to be doing okay, like Daredevil, Spider-Man's selling relatively well. And you wonder, okay, so are they going to change those creative? I mean, Dan Slott's finishing up his epic Amazing Spider-Man run, you know, longest any writer has worked on the character ever, or any one single character. He's got more issues of Amazing Spider-Man than anyone has ever written anything before. I think Brian Michael Bendis had the previous record, and number three was Stan Lee and Jack Kirby on Fantastic Four with like 100 issues. But Slott blew them all out of the water, and he, you know, was already announced he was leaving. Nick Spencer, I think, is coming in to write Amazing Spider-Man. I think that's who it is. So, you know, that was already done, and it was announced that Slott was moving over to Iron Man. So those plans had been in the works for a long time, you know, as part of Marvel Legacy. And so now you wonder, well, are those going to change? Are they folding him in? So, yeah, you just wonder. Anyway, enough about Marvel reboots. Let's talk about something positive from Marvel. Black Panther dominates box office, $241.9 million for the four-day holiday weekend. I think it took in something like $201 million, I want to say, or $207 million for the three-day weekend, which is like the fifth biggest opening of all time. Biggest superhero movie except for Avengers. Biggest February opening ever. I mean, it shattered like all kinds of records. I think it's over $400 million already for the worldwide box office, and it hasn't opened in Japan yet or in China, which is, you know, China's like the second biggest market for movies. So yeah, it did really, really well. I have to be honest. Well, I haven't seen it, but I have to be honest that I almost have a little bit of Black Panther fatigue already, just because that's all I heard about like all weekend. And even when I listen to my regular podcast on Monday driving to work, they were every I was like, oh, let me see what my comic book podcast, you know, they released a new episode. Let me check it out. Oh, it's Black Panther movie review. I haven't seen it yet. Don't really feel like listening to that. Go and listen to my other podcast that they release on Mondays. And they're talking about Black Panther. And it's like, I understand that it's a great movie and cultural, you know, significance, a milestone and everything. And that's fine. I don't have a problem with that, but it's just like anything. It's just kind of the way I am. When I get inundated with something, it turns me off to it. Like, I feel like I'm being beaten over the head with it, you know? It's like, okay, great. It did great. I'm happy for everybody involved. Happy that people are going to the movies, and hopefully it sparks some, you know, people to pick up some comics, whether it's Black Panther comics or something else. I'm all for that. Glad it did great. I'm ready to be like, let's move on to the next thing. Let's talk about something else other than Black Panther. But anyway, yeah, it dominated, and it'd be interesting to see what the consequences of this are, what, you know, the repercussions. I imagine, much like Wonder Woman, you know, sequel got greenlit right away. I think they're already filming it. So I would expect to hear, you know, Black Panther coming in 2020, you know, early 2020. Or Christmas 2019. I'm sure they're going to be fast-tracking a sequel just based on the success of this. I know you went and saw it, Manny. What do you have to say about it dominating $241.9 million?
First of all, if you had so much Black Panther fatigue, you wouldn't put it in your podcast. So
I can't not. I'm not talking about the movie itself because I haven't seen it. But how can I not acknowledge the fact that it's like the fifth highest opening weekend ever? Not comic book movie.
I'm no, I know.
Movie ever. It's insane.
I mean, so just overall, just such a well-balanced movie. Ryan Coogler is one of my favorite directors. He did Fruitvale Station, which is a movie about the shooting about the young man at the BART station, Fruitvale Station in Oakland, which obviously, being that I am from the Bay Area, I'm from Oakland, as well. It strikes a nerve. But that's when him, Michael B. Jordan, kind of broke out in the independent film sector. And then they worked together again on Creed, which, again, really, really good movie. Just, you know, following the Rocky films, and they're working on Creed 2 with the son of, where he's going to face off with the son of Khal Drogo. Wait, no. Ivan, what the hell's his name? You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, just really, really well balanced. I mean, just such, like, just the cast for that film. You have, like, you know, Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther, which is dope. I mean, Eric Killmonger played, who was Michael B. Jordan played, who a lot of people are comparing him to, you know, because you know how, like, Marvel has had kind of, like, vague villains. A lot of times Loki's been the only one that they've really said, you know, has really had any staying power and just any substance whatsoever. But, you know, so much praise went out to Michael B. Jordan portrayal of Eric Killmonger. And then just the supporting cast was just so awesome. And then there's the one who stole the show, Letitia Wright, who played Black Panther's little sister, Shuri, definitely stole a lot of that movie just by her portrayal. Just really well balanced. One of the smartest people in the Marvel universe, yet also was the little sister of T'Challa, and just really well balanced character. And now there's so many people wanting to see so much more of her. And then the cool thing about it is that we get to see a lot of these characters again very soon in Avengers Infinity War. So it's pretty exciting times. I know I loved it. I'm going to go watch it again. And then also having all the Oakland ties to it for me just kind of put the cherry on top for me as a really good movie. My only complaint, if anything whatsoever, is that I wish the action sequences would have been a little bit better. They're kind of lame, but just overall a really, 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 really good movie.
All right. Next thing I want to mention, and these will be in the show notes. DC released 7 of the 8 decade theme covers for Action Comics number 1000. So Manny and I were talking about it on the 9-panel grid episode that came out on Tuesday this last week. When did our Future Picks episode? Action Comics 1000 comes out in April. There are, I think, 10 covers, because there's a blank cover, there's the regular Jim Lee cover, and then there's one cover for each decade, right? So there's one cover for the 30s, one for the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s. So 8 decade-themed covers. Regular cover, blank cover. So today they released 7 of the 8 decade theme covers, everything but the 1980s. Again, there will be images in the show notes. Wow, I was blown away. I was having the hardest time trying to decide what my favorite one was. I'm not normally a fan of Mike Allred's work, which is a shame in a way, because he's like such a great, him and his wife, they're both like super, super nice people and super great. He's got a really thick line. And to me, his figures and his rendering just looks a little stiff. You know, just not really a fan. I love his layouts, but just not a fan of his rendering and just his line work. That being said, he does the 60s variant, and he's kind of like channeling Kurt Swan. And if I have any nitpick, it's that Superman's like super buff up top, but he's got little chicken legs. It doesn't look quite right, but he did a great job. Like that is like the minor of most minor, because it's this great, he totally captured the feel of the 60s. It looks like one of those awesome Silver Age Action Comics or Legion of Superheroes covers, and it's just incredible. The 70s cover by Jim Steranko, again, as soon as I saw it, I was just like, wow. I mean, classic Steranko, Superman's flying, he's holding a flagpole with the American flag. It's a dynamic pose, really, really awesome. The Dan Jurgens one, you know, it's Dan Jurgens. It's 1990 Superman. It was super great. And then the Lieber Mayo for the 2000s. I was just like, man, I know there's no original art, because I know Lee works digitally these days. I'm glad, because there's no way I'd ever be able to afford it. But just knowing that piece of Lee Bermejo original Superman cover art was out there somewhere and somebody else owned it, that would just bother me because that's how awesome it is. So I'm sure that DCBS is going to have or already does have a package up where you can order like all the covers because I'm going to need them all. Joshua Middleton is doing the 80s cover. So my guess would be he's either just a little behind or maybe there was something that the editor wanted him to change in the image. So that's the only one we haven't seen yet. But yeah, they're really, really cool. Did you get a chance to look at them, Manny?
They're great. I mean, just Superman throughout the decades. I just... like you, I gotta get all of them. This is, without a doubt, one of the most important moments in comic book history because Action Comics 1000, that's awesome. And I love how much attention they're giving to it. I love how many artists are on this. I mean, just really impressed with everything. And, Lee Bermejo's cover is pretty sick. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Right.
So yeah, man, I mean, so good. I've even, my daughter, because of this, my daughter and I have even, we've taken up to watching, the 90s, The Adventures of Superman. And we're trying to get as much Superman as we can. And this is coming from somebody who is not necessarily the biggest Superman fan. So, good stuff.
Yeah, and also the DC solicits came out today. So, again, this is for a lot of you that listen to our 9-panel grid podcast as well as the Comic Source podcast. Because I was speculating on, and Manny and I were both talking about how a lot of creator shuffling going on at DC right now. Not in a bad way, not like titles are doing terrible and they need to shuffle, but a lot of news within the solicit. So Benjamin Percy, who is one of my favorite writers on Green Arrow from the last few years since Rebirth started, he's actually going to be taking over Nightwing. So as we said on the podcast yesterday, Tim Seeley was writing Nightwing, Sam Humphries was on Green Lanterns. They flip-flopped. Turns out Humphries is only doing one arc on Nightwing. Not sure where he's going yet, but Benjamin Percy, we knew he was leaving Green Arrow. Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly are taking over that book, along with writing Gotham City Garage. And they did a few issues, at least a two-issue arc on Nightwing in between Humphries and Percy. So we know who is on Nightwing now. It's not Kelly and Lansing. It's Percy going forward. And, you know, we'll see how he does. Super Sons and Batgirl and the Birds of Prey are canceled. So Peter J. Tomasi has thanked everyone who's reached out on Twitter saying, you know, how much they like the book and they're sad to see it go. So he tweeted out a picture of a couple of action figures and said, "Stay tuned, everybody. It's not the end of his journey with these two characters," but he couldn't say more now. So probably maybe an event or something going to happen with those characters. Maybe it's just on hiatus. It's going to come back. Maybe they're going to fold them into Titans. You know, things are up in the air right now. I'm not really sure. As far as Julie Benson and Shauna Benson, Batgirl and the Birds of Prey, same thing. Thanked everybody for their time on the book and for all the love. They are actually writing a Green Arrow, the Green Arrow Annual 2, that's going to be coming out also in May. And they have another title that's going to be announced that's probably going to start in the summer. So we'll pay attention to that. Also, we're seeing James Tynan leaving Detective. So he's been on it since Rebirth started, you know, a good two-year run. You know, he's super busy. He's got the No Justice event, weekly event in May coming with Scott Snyder. He's got Immortal Men from DC, and then he's got some creator-owned stuff over at Boom and such. So he's plenty busy. So not sure who's taking over Detective yet. Not sure where Julie Benson and Shauna Benson are going to go, although they've said there is another book. And I've looked for news on Sam Humphries. I looked yesterday to see about him leaving if he was off Nightwing. Obviously, he is with this announcement of Benjamin Percy on Nightwing. But I haven't seen his name. He hasn't said anything about he's still going to be with DC or he's going somewhere else or what exactly he's doing. So I have to keep my ears open for that. He, you know, I've met him a few times, interviewed him. He's a super fun guy, super nice guy. as far as his writing goes, I wasn't the biggest fan of him when Rebirth started. You know, I almost dropped, and Manny can attest to this, I almost dropped Red Lanterns, or Green Lanterns, rather, because he had the Red Lanterns in to start as the villain, and I was, like, Red Lanterned out. But I stuck with it, and it ended up being, like, one of my favorite books. He did a super, super great job with both Simon Baz and Jessica Cruz, so I definitely am going to pay attention to see where he goes next. And I don't know. I mean, we don't know who's on Detective. Maybe Humphreys is moving over to Detective. So, as I said, a lot of news in the solicits and news about the Marvel solicits being delayed. So I'm sure there'll be a bunch of news tomorrow when we see who's on what as far as Marvel goes. And also, and this hasn't happened since I can remember, Image didn't release their solicits today either because they have the Image Expo going on. So that got delayed there. So a lot of stuff going on in comic news today, as I said. So let's go ahead and get to the books we're going to talk about this week. The first book that I'm going to talk about is Brilliant Trash from Aftershock Comics, written by Tim Seeley, art by Priscilla Petrates, actually. I bet that's how it's said. Priscilla Petrates, and colors by Marco Lesko. So I actually had Tim Seeley on the podcast not too long ago to talk about this story, so go back and listen to that to get the details. Real quick, what the story is about is basically it's in the near future. Science has discovered a way to basically give people superpowers, but every time they use the power, they shorten their lifespan. So kind of think Spawn in a way, except that somebody could use all their power really quickly and burn out like super fast. So it's been an interesting book so far. I think issue 3 really kind of switched into high gear, and issue 4 takes it up another notch. First half of the issue, or maybe first third of the issue, is some more backstory about how exactly this went down, how the procedure was kind of discovered, and all the intrigue and everything that went on behind that, and the power struggle that's continuing even to the current time of the comic with trying to control this power and this ability to implant these superpowers within people. So one of our main characters, Kennedy, has basically the memories of the scientists that kind of perfected this procedure, and she's basically kind of reliving the life of that scientist in a way, so much so that she's able to like smell the smoke if someone's smoking a cigarette when she's, you know, in the memory. And the other main character, who the one that rescued her, brings her to kind of the evil genius, kind of the, his name's Jay Cromwell. He's the CEO of this corporation that's trying to, I guess, control the procedure. And he's not going to let, he tries to come across as a good guy to start, but it becomes pretty obvious early on that he's going to do whatever he needs to do to extract these memories from her, because that's more important to him than anything else, basically. And so this other character, can't remember what his name is, but he kind of sees himself as a superhero, and we learn kind of what that's all about in this episode, or this issue rather. Basically, Jay Cromwell has these little kids that he's actually like using, like he's given them powers, and they're kind of in the mind of Heller, I think is the guy's name. And they're basically showing him that he's a superhero. They're letting him see what he wants to see. And so he's always considered himself a superhero, even while he's been doing things that really aren't on the up and up. Because in a way, he's kind of been brainwashed, or he's as I said, he's seen things the way he wants to see them, or as Jay Cromwell wants to see them, so he can be the superhero of his own story. And this is when the light bulb kind of goes off for him, and he kind of goes off the reservation. He's not going to allow harm to come to Kennedy, whether it's from some other enemy that's chasing after her or his own supposed boss. So he's got kind of gone off the reservation as of the end of this issue, and everything is really up in the air now. As I said, he sees himself as a superhero, and he's just not going to let anything happen to her. So it's as much as last issue kind of took it up a notch with Kennedy kind of accepting where she's at and accepting that there's this craziness going on in the world. Now it's taken it up another notch for Heller, and he realizes that he wasn't on the side of the angels, but now he is. So it'll be interesting to see how long that lasts and how long he's able to continue to use his powers, because as I said, the more he uses them, you know, the shorter his lifespan. And in fact, the original title for this comic book was Lifespanners, and they changed it to Brilliant Trash for some other reasons that we talked about on that previous podcast. So yeah, it's been an interesting book. You know, it's from Aftershock, so if it's from Aftershock, it's worth my time, is how I feel about it. So what's the first book you're going to mention, Manny?
First book I'm going to mention is Batman 41 by Tom King with art by Mikael Jenin, and then the colors by Jun Chung. Poison Ivy is back, and she somehow has taken over the world, except for Batman and Catwoman. So pretty much everyone is in love with her. She has everybody under her spell, and her influence has just taken over, I mean, everybody around the world, the rest of the Justice League, and it's up to both of them to stop her. It's a really beautiful book to look at. Mikael Jenin just does a fantastic job with the artwork. And that's pretty much all to say about it. Batman, because it all takes place at the manor. Batman wakes up. He notices something's wrong with Alfred. Turns out that he's already been infected. Little by little, he comes to find out that everybody's been infected as Poison Ivy, lets him know. And she's even got a hold of the cure that would have cured everyone, but now her strain is stronger than that, so she feels that she's unstoppable. And one of the cool moments in the books is Batman goes to strike her, and she pretty much commands a Flash to get in the way, and he ends up punching him in the face instead of her. Just a really good book, really nice setup. It's interesting because this can only last a couple of issues, one or two, because we have a wedding to plan, and that's coming up really, really soon. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see a little bit of a Swamp Thing here, because being that it has to do with the green and the end. Just Tom King continues to do a solid job with Batman.
Yeah, you mentioned a wedding. That reminds me, there is another title in this list today that I wanted to mention. It's DC Nation Zero. It's only 25 cents. It has three different stories that all have to do with some major events that are going to happen really soon in the DC universe. So there's a story by Tom King about the Joker's reaction to the wedding and what he may or may not be doing to stop it when he finds out Catwoman's, you know, going over to the other side and Batman's going to be married. There's a prelude to the Justice League No Justice storyline that I mentioned earlier, James Tynan and Scott Snyder. And there's also a preview of Brian Michael Bendis's Man of Steel 6-issue miniseries. So only 25 cents. So be sure and pick one up. Only the first print is going to be 25 cents. Subsequent printings are going to be more. There's four different covers. There's the regular cover. There's a 1 in 100 cover, a 1 in 250 cover, a 1 in 500 cover. So there may actually be, they'll sound like some pretty high numbers as far as variant covers go. But the thing is, the fact that it's only 25 cents, so retailers, you know, are probably paying like, well, some of them that have big accounts and order a lot are paying like 10 to 12 cents. So when you think about, you know, if you're paying 12 cents and you have to order 500 of them, you know, that's less than $100 to get one of the one in 500, and you could probably sell that for $100. So everything you make off the books is just profit at that point. But I definitely wanted to remind everybody of that. Because as I said, only the first print is 25 cents, and it's going to set up a lot going on. And DC's also said that they're not going to reprint it anywhere else. It's just going to be in that DC Nation Zero issue. So, all right, next book I'm going to talk about, Brave and the Bold number one, writer and artist Liam Sharp, colors by Romulo Fajardo Jr. And let me just say, I really enjoyed this book, number one. Number two, this is already an early entry for me for best writer artist for Liam Sharp. I mean, when he came back, and I got a chance to meet him at WonderCon, he came back on Wonder Woman. He was so excited. Such a pleasure, such a joy. You could see how excited he was to be back working on a monthly book. And I mean, the guy's just awesome. His art, it's more than just comic art. I've said many times, it looks like fine art. That's the case in this book as well. So basically the story is there's a god who is in charge of this, I guess, this kingdom, this alternate universe kingdom that's for the fairy folk. The fairy folk were forced to abandon Earth, or they were supposed to leave. And this lord of fertility and the hunt, who's a distant cousin of the gods that Wonder Woman knows, he's kind of placed in charge, right? And so there's this fairy folk that kind of left Earth behind, and there were portals going back and forth. But as these fairy folk were gone and people stopped remembering them, stopped thinking about them, stopped believing in them, those doors kind of closed one by one. So they're almost trapped in this other world. It's almost like a prison to them. And there's two factions, and they don't really get along. So they're to the point now where war is about to break out. And so this god, Cernunnos, yeah, say that five times fast. Anyway, he visits Wonder Woman, asks for her help as, you know, a peace broker and a facilitator of agreements and treaties and such. And so she agrees to travel with him to this world, this kind of pocket little city or kingdom, and help him find some common ground between these two different fairy folk. Meanwhile, there's something going on in the Irish quarter of Gotham City. Batman Bruce Wayne is in the Batcave working out, and he notices the people there seem to be walking around in a daze. He goes to investigate and becomes embroiled in whatever's going on himself. Clearly, it has something to do with what's going on in this this fairyland. And also, when Wonder Woman returns with the kind of the ruler of that place, one of the kings or the leaders of one of the factions has been murdered, and they're blaming somebody from the other faction for it. So that's kind of the cliffhanger ending that it stops on. So the real strength of this is the grandeur with which Liam Sharp writes, as far as just the way he scripts, that the way the these kind of mythical beings talk. It's very flowery speech, even the exposition, the dialogue boxes, very flowery, very evocative of that kind of ancient Gaelic feel. So it helps to set the tone. And then the art is just absolutely outstanding. I had read one review that somebody kind of said that it was boring to them. So I wasn't quite sure what to expect, you know, being that I'm a Liam Sharp fan, but I'm more familiar with just his, you know, artistic side. Haven't read anything that he's written before, but I didn't find it to be boring at all. I thought it was very appropriate for the kind of story he was telling. The 6-issue miniseries based on the strength of the first issue, I'm in for sure. Even if the writing was below average, I think I would still stick it out just based on the strength of the art. But I had no problem with the writing at all. I thought it was done very well, well-paced, you know, well-scripted. It'll be interesting to see, you know, it's Brave and the Bold, so you always think Batman team-up. That's what the classic Brave and the Bold title was. But yet, Wonder Woman and Batman are going to team up, I'm assuming. But yet in this first issue, they don't even know that they're both kind of involved in the same, you know, story, so to speak. They haven't met yet or come face to face. So I'm interested to see kind of that dynamic play between the two. If Sharp takes a cue from the way Tom King did it in the recent Batman issues, or if it's more how they react and interact with each other in the Justice League. So I'm interested to see that and see how that all plays out. So definitely in, recommend it, get out there, pick it up. You know, the art is stunning for sure. What do you have up next, Manny?
My next title is from Vertigo, and that's going to be Deathbed Number One by Joshua Williamson, and art by Riley Rossmo, and then colors by Ivan Plasencia. This one actually it wasn't even on my radar, to be honest with you. When we got our previous copies for the week, I just happened to click on it, and Riley Rossmo's artwork actually just happened to catch my eye. Really, really pop culture-y look to it. Really, really, really bright, and in the way that it's presented, and so it intrigued me. So I went on ahead and read it. Vertigo titles aren't necessarily what I'm known for reading, but it follows. It starts with following a young lady named Valentine Richards, who she's a failed novelist who's a reporter. She seems to make her money by writing other people's like memoirs or life stories, and this is kind of how she makes her ends meet, because she can't really find her voice ever since she was in fourth grade, when she wrote apparently one of the best papers ever. But she's been ordered to write the story of a man named Antonio Luna, who, according to the solicit, is the world's greatest living adventurer. And you can see that by the page with the title and the credits. You see a bunch of different images with a lot of different years attached to them. I mean, just spanning from 1989 all the way to, I mean, different eras. And so this one follows her going there and meeting the man, and then kind of finding out he's kind of weird, he's kind of wacky, and he's 90 years old, and he's supposedly on his deathbed, so he needs somebody to tell her story. And as she tries to do that, she starts to find out that this guy is into a lot of weird things, and it turns out that it's been a ruse, that he's actually dying. He's just trying to get rid of some of his enemies. And I mean, it's weird because it's like they're supernatural creatures that he kills. And my favorite line of the book, she asks him, "Hey, I thought you were dying." And he responds by saying, "I've been dying since the day I was born." I thought that was really well written. She's kind of reluctant to follow him along, but then by, after learning a couple more things, she then decides that, yeah, she wants to go ahead and go on this journey with him to find out who this man is and to write his life story. But the book says he's going to regret it. So definitely recommend this. This is Joshua Williamson. He did a really good job on The Flash, and also he wrote the short miniseries Frostbite. No, I have not read Damage Number 2.
All right, well, that's the next book I'm going to talk about, and the reason I decided to talk about it was because not that you hated issue 1, but you were kind of down on it, I think, you know, partly with the Suicide Squad.
Well, so. I was really down on it because of the inclusion of the Suicide Squad.
Right, right. So
kind of like how you have that Joker fatigue, I kind of have that Suicide Squad fatigue.
Fair enough. Anyway, the reason I wanted to talk about it is because I wanted to stick with it and see if what I expected and the promise that I saw in issue one kind of played out. And it totally did. You know, it's no surprise. Written by Robert Venditti, who was my writer of the year last year. Art by Tony Daniel, or I should say pencils by Tony Daniel, inks by Danny Mickey, and colors by Tomeu Morey. So this gave us more backstory and history of Elvis Ethan Avery, Damage, that's his alter ego. We kind of see some interplay between him and the Damage character. They can basically talk to each other. So when Avery's in like his human form, he hears the voice of Damage in his head, and it's like a completely separate entity. It's not like he's talking to himself, right? And then later when Avery has manifested into Damage, he's speaking to Damage, you know, in a voice. And again, it's not Damage as a different personality. So it's almost like a firestorm, you know, with where it's two people that combine into one and they can communicate with each other. So that was really interesting. The art by Tony Daniel, I stick by what I said last issue, some of the best work of his career. But just having this backstory, really starting to flesh out the character and seeing that Avery kind of got the shaft, like, you know, no surprise there. And even when he's in his like human guise, he has a little bit of a swagger to him, even though he knows he's kind of in pretty deep, you know, he's up the creek with no paddle for sure. When the Suicide Squad does show up, but it's almost, I don't want to say an afterthought, but it's almost incidental to kind of the background and the character work we're getting from Venditti. But beyond that, my favorite thing about the issue was Venditti scripting. I mean, he's such a great writer. He injects humor without like necessarily trying. And it's like, it's a laugh out loud moments that I just love. So as I said, Damage and Suicide Squad, they do kind of get into it. And the person that's in charge of the Damage project, Colonel Jonas, who we met last issue, and she, you know, seems like she's kind of an Amanda Waller type, a little bit, you know, somewhat. She has a chip on her shoulder. She, you know, tries to be a badass. She has an eye patch. And so she's watching this fight between Damage and Suicide Squad. And one of her subordinates says, should we move in? Should we move our teams in? You know, because he's only Damaged for 1 hour. And after it's expired, that 1 hour, Ethan will be in a weakened state. And Jonas replies that they can't move in because Washington took the recovery operation away from them and gave it to Waller. She says, this is Waller's dumpster fire. All we can do is watch it burn. It's just so good. It's moments like that. And then when Damage pretty much hands the Suicide Squad their lunch, and Waller calls Deadshot to figure out like what's going on, like what's the status report, he says, Parasite and Giganta are out. The kid used a condo for a baseball bat. And Grundy didn't even make it to Wednesday. I mean, it's writing like that. I mean, this isn't the first time where I've read, you know, Venditti scripting where it's made me laugh out loud. I remember there was a great line in a Flash comic with Gorilla Grodd where Flash puts a little tiny bomb inside Gorilla Grodd's ear. And he flashes something about Gorilla Grodd having giant gorilla fingers. And he's like, you know what sucks about having gorilla fingers? You can't even reach inside your own ear to take the bomb out. But the way he says it is just really funny. So, yeah, I mean, there's a reason Venditti's my favorite writer. I love what the guy's doing. And to say that this this Damage book is just a ripoff of the Hulk is selling it way, way short. The art by Tony Daniel, as I said, is absolutely spectacular. The writing and scripting is top notch. And after issue two, I'm even more engaged, and I can't wait for the next issue. So what do you have up next, Manny?
I have another Batman book, Batman, Sins of the Father, number one. And this one is written by Christos Gage, with art by Rafael Ienko and colors by Guy Major. Reason why I chose this is because this book actually ties into ties into the Telltale games that are pretty popular. These are the games where you can kind of choose your own adventure. They became pretty popular when Walking Dead did it. And now there's actually two seasons of the Batman one. And this one actually, this comic book takes place in between the first season and the second season. And it's actually really interesting. It's set up by the first season of the game where you find out that Bruce and Oswald Cobblepot were actually longtime friends when they were little. And then his life went a different direction than his when his family was accused of certain things. And then obviously Thomas and Martha were murdered. But then it was unraveled that that Thomas and the Wayne Enterprises was actually involved with Carmine Falcone and with some crime. So it's a lot of his assets were taken away, and so kind of like where Green Arrow got left off, where he got everything taken away from. This is where Batman Sins of the Father starts off, and it's him trying to figure out what's the deal with his family, what his dad was really up to, because you find out in the first season that Alfred knew all of this stuff all along, but he was not going to tell Bruce about it until it was absolutely necessary. So It's a good series to follow. If you like the Telltale games, I think this is a good book to pick up. Plus, Christos Gage's writing is really good. So I enjoyed it, and I look forward to continue to read it. And actually, I'll be following the game a little bit closer now.
All right. Last book I'm going to mention, Justice League number 39, written by Christopher Priest, art by Ian Churchill, colors by Alex Salazzo. Justice League was one of those books I kind of felt like DC didn't get right with Rebirth. You know, it should be their flagship title, but for some reason it just didn't gel for me. You know, even the previous Justice League version with Brian Hitch that fell further and further behind because Hitch was trying to both write and draw, and he's just not the fastest artist. And that continued even after Rebirth to finish it up. But then we had Tony Daniel on art, and it was, you know, pretty solid art. Tony Daniel's a good artist, but I just felt like the story Hitch was trying to tell, it was choppy and it didn't have flow, and he didn't seem to understand the relationships between the characters very well. So I wasn't feeling it. I actually dropped it pretty early on. And I've heard Christopher Priest is on the book, and with Priest, I run kind of hot and cold. I know there's a lot of people that just absolutely love his work, and I know he's capable of some incredible work, but at the same time, all his work to me feels a little bit derivative, you know, ever since the Quantum and Woody, when he first started using the black panel with the white text in it to kind of set the stage for either the setting or the mood or whatever's going on. And he's used it over and over. He used it in Black Panther, used it in Deathstroke. And, you know, he was on Deathstroke, and that was another title Rebirth title that actually dropped. You know, I hear it got a lot better and it was super good. I was having a hard time following it. And this is the thing about Priest, right? His stuff ends up being so political. And I don't mean necessarily, you know, ripped from the headlines kind of political, but just, you know, politics in and of itself is relationships between people and between people and, you know, higher powers and governing bodies and things like that. And so it was no surprise when I don't think I've read a Justice League issue since like 7, and this is 39. So I didn't know what to expect. I knew it was the first issue of a new arc, so I went ahead and picked it up. I didn't have a hard time getting into it at all. It's Justice League Lost part 1. Didn't have a hard time understanding like what's been going on. It is political, but at the same time, it's an interesting question that Priest is asking. Basically, the theme of the story is kind of responsibility as superheroes, right? So we know some things have gone on previously in the first arc that Priest did on the Justice League title with some bad actors, some villains impersonating the League. specifically one as Batman assassinating someone, and there are consequences. We see in this issue that Cyborg has to appear before like a congressional committee, and he's saying, no, it wasn't Batman. And they're like, well, why isn't Batman here? Well, because he's actually out trying to save lives right now. There's a train derailment that's going to release these chemicals and kill a bunch of people. But supposedly there's going to be a class action suit coming up, a civil suit against the Justice League, you know, signed by all these people who probably have ever had their house destroyed when the Justice League were fighting some big bad guy. And so it's political in that. It's political in that he's trying to answer this question, like, who's to blame and where should the responsibility lie? And it's an interesting question. It's one we don't necessarily have in the real world because we don't have superheroes, but we have analogs to that, right? When bad things happen and who should be responsible and this and that. So I found it enjoyable enough. The art by Ian Churchill was really, really good, as well as the colors by Alex Salazzo. So my plan is to actually go back and get caught up on Justice League. I don't know if I'll go all the way back to the beginning and power through the early stuff that I was kind of struggling with, or if I'll just start with what Priest did. But if you're not reading Justice League, I would say there's absolutely no problem just picking up this issue and catching on to what's going on and being able to follow it going forward. It's pretty solid. I really, really enjoyed it. All right, that's it for me, Manny. What do you have left?
All right, due to time issues, I'm going to just go ahead and do one more. And that's going to be from Top Cow. It's going to be Postal Mark number one. This is by Matt Hawkins and by...
You cut out right there. Artist is Raphael Ionco. So same artist as Sins of the Father.
Yeah, same artist as the Batman book that I talked about earlier. This is pretty much wrapping up the series, the Postal series, which Matt Hawkins had started and Brian Edward Hill did such an amazing job with. And then... This book just focuses on just a little bit of where's Mark a year later after the events of the last issue of Postal 28, I believe it was. And I mean, holy cow, this guy is the perfect mix between his mom and dad. And actually, when we last saw Mark's dad, his mom Laura had actually let him go because she believed she had taken everything from him. Mark wasn't too happy about that. So he actually had him brought back, and he takes him to the under the church where he kind of decides his fate. And actually that's where I'm going to leave it. Just because it's something that I think you should read yourself. It's interesting because next month we're also going to get the one shot of what happened to Laura. Last we heard, she was in the field and there was a gunshot. So who knows if this is going to be more a little bit of a backstory. Did she actually shoot herself? Did she not shoot herself? It's going to be an interesting issue. But as far as Mark, I find this to be a really satisfactory ending just because, we've seen Mark go from just being the post office guy and kind of his mom's errand boy all the way to now the leader of Eden, and, just the way he's been able to earn the respect of everyone from just being the guy with Asperger's. Calling him names and things to this guy is somebody that we need to respect and we need to listen to because he's crazy and not in a crazy in a way that he'll kill you if you get out of line. His interactions in this book with his dad are just so good. Really great moments, and I am sad to see the series go, but correct me if I'm wrong, but they might be bringing this back in a year or so.
Yeah, it's supposed to be bringing it back in 2019, so it'll be interesting to see if it's the same characters or do they go back and tell stories of other people in the town in the same time frame as 1 through 28? Or is it Mark's now the leader going forward and kind of new stuff? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. So just really excited to see that. I mean, that it's going to come back because, you know, this has been one of my favorite series. I had the opportunity to interview Brian Edward Hill for LRM. And I mean, I could have talked, for days. I mean, just from all the great character developments to the progression of the stories to the crossovers to, I mean, just really, really well thought out and just one of my favorite independent comics overall. So that comes out tomorrow in case you haven't picked it up yet.
How'd you feel about having a different artist on it for the first time?
It was okay. Cause I like Raphael's art. So it wasn't too bad. And then also just the fact that, you know, Brian wasn't writing it. It was Matt, which is okay. I guess it's one way to, you know, he started it. Now he gets to do the last issue. So because it's a one shot, it didn't really just really bug me, especially because of how engaged I was with the story. So, I thought it was fine.
All right. Well, one last thing before we go, let me just run down a few of the other titles you might want to keep your eye out for, when you go to your comic shop tomorrow. From Aftershock, in addition to Brilliant Trash, number 4, we also have Alters, number 10. From DC, in addition to the few that we mentioned, I also wanted to say that Wonder Woman Conan, number 6 of 6, wrapping up that series, is going to be coming out tomorrow. From Image, in addition to Postal Mark One Shot, we also have Hit Girl number 1. You know, we recently saw a new Kick-Ass number 1, so this is the companion to that. From Marvel, you've got Black Panther Annual 1. You've got Avengers 681, which is continuing that No Surrender weekly story. There's also Doctor Strange Damnation 1, kicking off that kind of little mini event in the supernatural corner of the Marvel Universe. And there's also Infinity Countdown Prime number 1, which is kind of getting people ready for the Avengers Infinity War movie. And not only does it have a story about the Infinity Stones being kind of discovered now that everyone in the Marvel Universe kind of knows where they are again, there's also a primer in there that gives the history, the entire history of all the Infinity Gems/Stones. So if you want to kind of get the comic book history of those, I recommend picking that up. And then last thing I'll mention is from Valiant, Ninjak in the Valiant Universe number 2 and Quantum and Woody number 3. I talked about both those comics on the last episode or most recent episode of Valiant Sunday. So Manny and I want to thank everyone for joining us. Please go to thecomicsourceblog.com for all past episodes of the podcast. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where you can find us on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to keep up to date with whenever we drop new episodes and all our convention coverage as well. Don't forget about the 9-panel grid, our exclusive podcast over at lrmonline.com. And be sure while you're there to check out all the other pop culture coverage of comics, movies, TV shows, all that great stuff. So thanks for joining us, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.